Welcome to Stories of COVID, the interview project that explores what it's like to experience a global pandemic.
I never thought I would see this in my lifetime.
It is scary and it's very real, but it's not hopeless.
As I said, I changed 3 planes. None of them were wearing any gloves or masks.
I've never seen so much support for freelancers or artists in the media as I have now.
They both laid me off from just the advent of the outbreak.
I'm anthropologist and author Veronica Curran, and I am building an interview archive of stories and anecdotes that define this time in history to write a book preserving this experience for future generations. If you'd like to help preserve this moment in history for future generations, check out the show notes to sign up for an interview. Madeline had an interesting lens into two different sides of Canada throughout the pandemic. She was living in Toronto as a student at the start of the pandemic, but had the ability to go stay with her family in Vancouver for much of the most intense months. She got to see how the different cities managed the pandemic, managed lockdown, and also managed regulations, and shares that with us in this episode.
First time I heard was, it was about February. My mom was in town from Vancouver, and I remember being out at my grandpa's, and like we were just kind of starting to see the news reports that, you know, there's something going around, something happening. You know, and the only real kind of change, we were like, oh, maybe we should be washing our hands more every time we come in, and maybe don't touch your face. Like it was just kind of weird of there's something, and we kind of know the basic kind of hygiene things around that, but, you know, obviously never expected it to kind of escalate within the next month. Coming from a kind of health background, I'm studying kinesiology. There was a bit of a basic understanding of kind of virus and, you know, coronaviruses to, you know, quite a surface level, but still a bit of an understanding of the science and whatnot of it. So I kind of understood how we went from a news report that there's something happening to a global pandemic. You know, while it's shocking to actually be living in it, you know, it's 100%, you know, understandable and predictable just based on, you know, history and the science of it. I spent 9 months in Vancouver and now I'm back in Toronto, and you know, both places it's really starting to kind of open back up. I know for myself as a student, U of T is going back to full in-person courses and campus activities come January. So that's kind of like the big mark for myself and a lot of other students of like, where are we with this? And, you know, that mainly because of just kind of the rate of vaccinations and having that mandatory as a U of T student. So it just came out in Ontario that booster shots are planned for everyone and that they're going to be, well, they've already started, I know, for the most vulnerable and immunocompromised, and that they're starting with the elderly. So, you know, that they said probably by early 2022, I think was the plan, was for everyone to start being able to access that. You know, the biggest kind of like practical change was school switching to online classes. And I love that. I love online classes. I did part of high school by choice online. So, you know, that aspect, I was quite fortunate that switch wasn't, you know, a stressor for me. And then I ended up going back to Vancouver in November 2020 with my grandpa. And so, you know, the biggest takeaway for me is the time that I got to spend with family that would never have happened. And that's, you know, as cheesy and corny as it is, you know, that's the silver lining of this time. So I ended up flying back, yeah, in November with my grandpa and staying with my parents, and we were able to be there. It was the 1 year anniversary of my grandma's death. So we got to be kind of family together there, and he stayed for a couple of months before he was like, I just want to go back home. So he came back to Toronto and I stayed out in Vancouver you know, during that time, initially in November, it was way more open in Vancouver. If you were in your household bubble, you know, you could eat in a restaurant. So we were able to live a relatively normal life within kind of our group or our household bubble, compared to Toronto that was, you know, on full lockdown. And so that was kind of what dictated how long my grandpa stayed. It's like, you can't even get a haircut. So don't go and you can't go to the grocery store. So like, you know, it's better off just stay here. You know, you are enjoying it, even if you like to joke that you're like, I'm just tired and ready to go home. You know, also our family dog who's been living with me in Toronto since 2014 is, you know, he'll be 13 later this month. And so it was nice to know that, you know, he got to spend time with my parents and my brother, and they got to, you know, have 9 months with him back in their lives, you know, physically. You know, FaceTime calls only amount to so much. I think everyone's kind of learned that, you know, so I would always like push him off and be like, you should have a sleepover at Zach's house, my brother's house, and like, just take him for the night. That's kind of like a small, big thing for us as a family. And now they're just talking about wanting to get a dog. So I'm like, yeah, there's probably plenty of rescues and adoptions being put up now as everyone goes back to working. So, you know, you're going to have plenty of pandemic dogs up for adoption. Grandpa came back out in August for a couple of weeks. We were able to see this time, you know, things had opened up quite a bit more and we had been vaccinated. So we were able to see some extended family, which is also really nice. My grandma's brother and their kids. And so it was also kind of nice, you know, to be able to connect with them. And then my grandpa and I flew back to Toronto in September. And, you know, I just jumped back into school. Yeah, for the most part, my life didn't change a lot in a practical sense. I normally kind of spent a lot of my time at home. And I spent my time focused and stressed out about school. You know, that process was all quite the same for me. You know, the biggest personal kind of interruption and loss to, you know, my day-to-day life was losing out on my sports. So that was always a big piece. You know, I'm a goalie in ice hockey and ringette and field hockey. And oh, those were always, you know, highlights and really important for my mental health and my physical health and being able to have those throughout the week. And so losing that was hard. And so that was like part of my motivator of, you know, technically I could have stayed in Vancouver longer because my classes are all online this semester. I was like, sports are opening up. I was like, I need to get back. My seasons are starting. I just want to get back on the ice. I want to get back in net. And also, you know, I love being around my family and my parents are well aware, but I'm also like, I'm also happy to get back to my routine and kind of having my space and back to my, you know, the life I've had for 9 years in Toronto. The first time I got back, like, was mid-October, and at this point, I also had a physical injury, you know, before COVID, so it was actually since January 2020 that I hadn't played in net. I had played a couple of games, you know, out as, like, a gradual transition, and then COVID hit. And so my first game back on the ice for ringette, I was super excited, and I was like, okay, let's just remember how to get my gear on. Let's remember how this goes. And I get out on the ice and my skates were too loose and I 100% like rolled over on my ankle and just went down. And I was like, oh my God, my teammate was able to tie my skates for me since I can't reach them once my equipment's on. You know, I played the game and I'm like, I think it's a fever dream. The like 15 plus years of ringette and being on the ice. I don't think that actually existed. Like there's no way that I've done this before. It was so uncomfortable. And then after the game, I was moving around. I was like, no, I full on just had like a minor high ankle sprain from not tying my skates tight enough. Like it was just this kind of almost out of body. Like, this isn't me. I know that I should be able to do this. And that's not even touching on the actual like physical fitness aspect. You know, I really didn't do a lot of activity. I had my back, it kind of went out on me during COVID. So, you know, even beyond that, I was physically injured for a portion of that. Yeah, I was like, so we still have 10 minutes. Oh, that's only the first half. Okay. All right, I can do this. We got this. And then I've played, you know, probably, you know, almost close to 10 ice times now. Still, I'm like, okay, my skates aren't right. I'm like, if I can just, you know, stay on my feet and feel comfortable and be able to move without, you know, worrying that I'm going to like trip or catch something. And it's like, I had my last game on Monday. It was the first time where I was like, okay, all right. No, I think I know how to do this. I think, okay. I definitely have played this before. Okay, I got this. I think I'm, you know, I'm getting there now. It's just a little rusty as opposed to what the hell am I doing right now? You know, my one rink, they have some COVID limits in terms of how many people. So we had a very short bench those first few games before those limits were lifted. So it was just like double whammy of you only have one sub on your spot. And so I always laughed. It was, I could hear them being like, are you ready? Like, are you ready to go back on? Because I need to get off. And they're like, no, I need a longer break. Like, okay, fine. And skate back out. And I'm like, oh, I feel so bad for you right now. And they're just, everyone just kind of slowed down as the game goes on. Technology was kind of a part of an equalizer for people. And also, you know, one of the biggest separators. We saw that suddenly, you know, governments and organizations like, oh, everyone should have internet access because suddenly everyone needed it. And everyone should have a computer to be able to access that. And so I have relied a lot on technology, you know, even before this. I often would, you know, there's memories and that my family has, or they'll comment about an event and I pipe in and they're like, wait, what? I'm like, well, I was on FaceTime for that entire evening from Toronto. So I've used and relied on technology and video calls for, you know, ever since I've been in Toronto. And so that was quite normal. And I knew kind of the impact of being able to share that and create memories, even if it's just like, you guys, I'm still in the kitchen. Can you please bring me over? Yeah, so being able to connect with people and have those FaceTime calls and those video calls. And then from a school aspect, you know, we had all of our schooling, you know, was available online. And I think a big piece about the pandemic that, you know, my parents are like, what do you think we're going to, you know, take away from this? And it's like accessibility and accommodations is a big piece from my experience. And I've, you know, required different accommodations. And so often you hear schools or companies being like, oh, like, you know, we can't do that. That's too much work. We're not able to implement that. And then suddenly once everyone needed to work from home and needed this flexibility, it's like, okay, we understand people have their needs. So we're gonna try and, you know, everyone's favorite word, we're gonna try and pivot. We're gonna get into this and you can work from home and we'll set up these videos or we'll record the lectures so you don't actually have to be there in person or at the same time. Like, it was suddenly all these options of utilizing technology were an option. So I think that's like a big piece as we realized, you know, the accessibility of technology and the opportunities it can open up and equalize things in a way. And then from the perspective of like a mental health advocate and the organizations I work with, is suddenly it's like, okay, how do we offer all of these services online? How do we continue to support the young people who are coming through our doors? You know, some of the factors is like, oh, suddenly we have to worry about, you know, do they even have a safe place to be able to have these conversations? Because normally, you know, our location is that place. And maybe it's the only place they feel comfortable sharing these, you know, what's going on in their life. And so being able to figure out how do we, you know, transition that, especially, you know, how do we transition group sessions safely onto a giant Zoom call where you can't, you know, have that direct impact or monitoring kind of all participants and their safety. You know, again, just from a accessibility aspect is it's, I know a couple of organizations were like, okay, I think we're gonna always keep this as an opportunity because suddenly we're able to reach people outside of Toronto. We can get to people who are in Northern Ontario that don't have services, are able to access it. You know, from that perspective, technology has opened up the care options for people in more remote neighborhoods, homes, and also very specific marginalized communities is you have enough people now to justify, which is kind of what you have to do when we're trying to find funding and running programmings to have enough participants. First thing that stands out from the pandemic is kind of the moment when internally things just felt, okay, something's happening. My last class was on the Friday. It was the last day that U of T did anything in person. And we had a lab and they were, you know, exercising to an extent on the bike and we were taking, you know, blood test samples. And people were kind of like, okay, we know something's going on. We're just kind of aware that like we were doing things physiologically and we knew something was happening, but we're like, yeah, it's fine. And then we got the message of, all right, so everything is transferring online. And it was kind of like, okay, so that weird kind of feeling we had was justified. And, you know, we were on that tipping point of falling into kind of a global pandemic at that point and having everything completely changed. Kind of everything shut down in mid-March. And then it would have been, I think it was end of June, was the first time that I got to hug my grandpa. And that was the first time I had physical contact in that way with a human since mid-March. I had been seeing my grandpa. I would drive out and I'd bring him groceries and we'd have parking lot hangouts outside of his building. We kind of got to a point where I had been isolating, he had been isolating. And, you know, we were still both masked up and everything, but it was the moment of, you know, we were in a parking lot after eating outside for lunch and it was like, all right, we're doing this. We're going to do this, you know, and just that moment was just kind of like, we knew we were still a ways away from really being able to relax, you know, and not having this nagging, you know, piece of like, are we going to regret this kind of feeling? But the joy, the connection in that moment of having probably one of the longest hugs I've ever had with him, like so grounding and realizing, you know, I'm very much a physical touch person in my life and kind of also realizing, okay, yeah, my body could use this and is missing having that physical connection with people, with friends, with family. Yeah, so in that moment, being able to share that hug and physical contact was like, all right, we have each other, we have people. For him, he's been, you know, my grandma died in November 2019, so was alone, you know, kind of during what was a time that my mom was going to be in Toronto more often and we were, you know, she was going to spend more time with him. We were going to kind of, you know, do that transition to suddenly you're alone after all those years. And then a global pandemic hit. Suddenly he went from, you know, being alone in the house to being alone really everywhere and in every way. And part of it, you know, is we had the acknowledgement of we were happy, you know, her death happened when it did, because she was in hospital for, it was about a week before she died. And so, you know, we were all able to come to Toronto, my family, and spend time together and be in the hospital all waiting around. And, you know, we were able to share moments and her brother was able to fly out. Like, so we got to share these really important times in person and be there and have that closure in a way. And so, you know, just thinking about how it was kind of a ticking time bomb, it was going to happen. kind of thing. And so if it had happened just a few months later, she would have been alone during all of that time. We would have been alone, separated. So I think in a way, the pandemic also kind of helped with some acceptance around the grief and around that moment. Knowing how important it was that we got to share that time in the hospital and have those moments, we can understand the impact of not being able to be there for your loved ones during COVID. There was a greater kind of emotional and empathetic understanding of how difficult that is, and the time and the space that's missing, and the impact on the care. You know, I saw in the ICU, she was in the ICU for all that time. So, you know, I saw the one-on-one care and the attention from the nurses and the impacts and the amount of work that they have for this one patient. And so hearing about, you know, maxed out ICUs and at capacity and all of that, and it's, you know, the impact on the nurses and the frontline staff is just, you know, I understand it from a health perspective, but having lived that really personal experience of it just months ago, it was hard to imagine. And, you know, again, I am grateful in a way, you know, that she died when she did, which is, you know, it's kind of odd, but it's, you know, also kind of comforting.
Thank you for listening. Subscribe so that you don't miss an interview. I interview multiple people a week, and I am releasing these episodes as fast as I can. And if the story meant something to you, share it, because it will probably mean something to someone else. Every time you share the project, it helps the project grow. So thank you. Until next time, stay safe, stay well.